The content of this program is meant for educational purposes only, because knowledge is power. However, the controversial subject matter discussed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour. Now, here's your host, Dave Krieger.
And once again, 8 o'clock on the money. That's right. That's the old saying in broadcast for those of you watching us on our digital platform. We actually, you can watch us on video right now. It just by going to thepowerhour.com and clicking on the video link, and you can actually watch us live streaming the show, as well as hearing us on shortwave 7.490, along with AM/FM stations across the country. Welcome to the land of the free and the home of the slave. That's what I call it. Anyway, I've got a chapter in my book called Doomed to Repeat that is entitled just like that. Anyway, here's the thing. We talked the last hour about CBDCs, which is the digital banking currencies. And it's kind of a scary thing. You know, we're all sitting there worried about what's going on today. And what we don't understand is what could be happening tomorrow. And we have a gentleman with us joining us on video that you can watch, because sometimes watching the conversation is a lot better than just listening to it. Michael Ribeiro is with us. He is a webmaster of a website called whatreallyhappened.com, and he's the host of the What Really Happened radio show. He is formerly with NASA, and he's done motion picture computer animation, working on films such as Star Trek The Day After Tomorrow. He supervised visual effects on Brain Scan, Lost, and Hawaii Five-O. Book him, Dano. I had to bring that up. But see, you also noticed some stuff about a suspicious photograph being broadcast on ABC News in 94 related to the death of White House Deputy Counsel Vince Foster. Everybody is all about that. And of course, you know, we always say, what's the difference between conspiracy theory and truth about 6 months? This thing's dragged out a lot longer than that. But anyway, Michael is what really happened. I mean, we've been focusing on the banks. I know everybody's got a thought about, because whoever's that gun, that gun was in the wrong hand. Is that what you noticed?
No, it was actually the fact that there was absolutely no blood visible in the picture, and suicide by gunshot to the mouth is a very, very messy affair. We found some comparison photos and videos. There were a lot of other things, and it wasn't like I was really political at the time, but my business at that time was visual effects in film and TV, and knowing what looked real and what didn't look real. And the instant I looked at that photo, I said, this is fake. This is about as fake as it gets. This is high school quality work. And, I started talking about it with some friends of mine, and I put up a little subpage at what was then my animation website. And next thing I knew, I was blacklisted out of Hollywood. And since I had so much free time on my hands, all of a sudden, I started digging a little bit more into what was really going on inside the inner workings of our government.
Makes sense. And boy, I bet you found out a whole bunch of stuff, just like I did when I wrote
more
the book,
than
Cloud and Titles.
Dreamt, more than I ever expected to find. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. You've been getting emails about various articles you've written about the problems with the current economic systems of being forced to borrow all currency. And I just reported this morning that this bank bailout was actually $16.4 or $16.8 trillion, not billions. And they've only borrowed about a fourth of that so far, or been given a fourth of it, $4.6 trillion. And there's still more to be given away. And it's all taxpayer dollars, folks. I don't know if you knew that or not. And then we've got Ukraine. And so now you've been getting all these emails asking you to explain, which is one of the reasons why we've got you on the show today for the hour, and explaining what's going on here. And we've talked on the show previously about the banks financing both sides of the equation when it comes to the wars. And now everybody, of course, is stocking up on potassium iodide, potassium iodate, nuke protect, because now there's this little veiled threat of tactical nuclear strikes if certain things happen.
Yeah.
And we're all like, wait a minute, is this just folly or could this really happen? Because the banks, they could just sit back and laugh watching all this go down and watching America crumble. I just keep telling Putin, if you're going to bomb anybody, bomb DC. Get rid of the cockroaches. Leave us alone.
The financial district in New York probably should be a first strike target as well. But, yeah. You know, it's a sweet deal for the bankers. They loan us the money to fight the wars and blow everything up. And then they turn around and loan us more money to rebuild what we used to have before. And so we wind up more or less with what we started with, except we're now trillions of dollars further into debt to the bankers.
Plus interest. Yeah, see, that's a sad state of affairs, and everybody knows it. I mean, the last 260 years, seriously. And, of course, this is the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, to which on his deathbed, Woodrow Wilson said, I've really screwed America. I'm paraphrasing here.
Yes.
but that's basically what he did, and he knew what he was doing when he signed it into law, and then they let this private cartel including the Rothschilds. Of course, we all know what Mayor Rothschild said about, you know, give me control of a nation's currency. I care not who makes the laws. So, and I'm just reading, I'm not even reading that. I just know it in my head. And of course, you've got the Jekyll Island bunch.
Yes.
That right now are pretty much running roughshod all over this country.
They are. They have been, ever since, the founding of the Third Bank of the United States, which they renamed the Federal Reserve because there were too many people who remembered what happened with the first and second banks of the United States and what a mess they caused. It's a little scam. This private central banking scam has been played on the human race for about 300 years. And because these bankers are very generous donors to candidates during campaign season, nobody has the will to stand up to them. The fact of the matter is Congress could revoke the charter of the Federal Reserve anytime it wants to. But they won't because, they're getting their piece of the action of this little scam that's going on.
Yeah, that's a sad state of affairs, all right. And you've got a video out as of 2016 called All Wars Are Bankers' Wars. The only way to pull this off is to manipulate Congress. And I can see, they basically don't want to do anything. We can't hurt the banks. The judges are the same way because they're all invested in the securities and they're all part of the retirement package. And every attorney that's gone into court because foreclosures now are starting back up again in America.
Yes,
I'm dealing with 14,000 active cases just in the state of California alone as we get ready for a January 28th workshop for foreclosure defense in Los Angeles this month at the end of the month. And so, we're in trying to make contact with all 14,000 homeowners, of which is very difficult to do because the list of data that we get do not include names and addresses. So we have to search these people out. And it's very, very complex and very, very tricky. And so, we basically have to stick to Southern California. I feel so bad for all the rest of these people out there that are sweating bullets. And we got people from Florida and attorneys from Texas and California. And I mean, everybody wants to get in the game because they want to find out how to stop the banking cartels from stealing people's homes. And it's not really the lenders of these REMIX. It's the servicers that are going in there based on the advances that they've had to pay the REMIX, many of which got paid off multiple times over. People just do not understand the process of securitization. Michael, I'm sure you do. You probably have studied this thing, crazy. And the thing is that it was all about the repeal of Glass-Steagall, wasn't it?
Well, that Glass-Steagall's repeal was part of the problem, but the other part was the securitization itself, where in the good old days, a mortgage lender or a banker would loan the money for the purchase of a house, and then they would have to keep an eye on the mortgage payer to make sure the loan was repaid. But with that huge real estate rush in 2008, the securitization chain became broken because the companies that were issuing the mortgages would then resell the mortgages to other investment companies. And, they stopped worrying about whether the mortgages were being paid or not, and people really got into trouble. There was a huge buildup, the bubble. The mortgages were being packaged as investment instruments called mortgage-backed securities, and a lot of bad mortgages were being mixed into these bundles, and the whole thing basically fell apart, triggering an economic crisis. But one of the big problems we have is that every time the government moves to try and regulate the financial industry says, well, yeah, you know, you do that, and we're not going to be supporting you in your next campaign. And so the banks basically have an open season hunting license on the American people's wallet.
They do. And I got to ask you another question. This is not of a personal nature, but how many times have you seen the movie The Big Short? I have watched that. I mean, it's like the replay button is constant because I've actually got the book too. I read the book as well as watched the movie multiple times. But I mean, every time I watch it, I get infuriated because everything I wrote in the book, Clotted Titles, which we have at the Power Mall, smacks about everything we're talking about. And it goes into detail on how the remix operate. And the thing is they're all operating under the Internal Revenue Code and under congressional authority. I mean, we gave them all this latitude because they instituted and Clinton signed the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which repealed Glass-Steagall and just unleashed the door for the banks to all come out and start playing in the securities market. And it allowed people like Bernie Madoff.
Money. Yeah. That was the big problem, is they were playing the Wall Street casino with the depositors' money. And that's why so many people got hurt. And because of economic globalization, the 2008 meltdown had global consequences. And we wound up having to bail out banks in Europe that were caught up in this mess.
Well, look what happened to the Bank of Iceland and what happened with the government of Iceland and how the citizens rallied against that, literally stoned them out of the place. Out of curiosity, the 844-769-2944 is our toll-free number if you want to call and chime in on our conversation. You may have some things to add. You may hear something that trips a trigger and you want to talk about it. That's fine. That's what the lines are open for. We still have freedom of speech in this country. And we're with Michael Ribeiro, and you wrote an article called The 11th Marble. Could you elaborate on what that article is about?
Well, The 11th Marble was a very simple illustration of the trap of interest, which is that, when you're a kid playing with marbles, you know that if you put 10 marbles into a can, you can only take 10 marbles out. But the private central banking system runs on the principle that they can put 10 marbles into the can or $10 into the economy and get 11 marbles or $11 out. And in a way, it's a Ponzi scheme because the debt is always growing. There's always more debt than there is money to pay the debt. And that's why it's a trap. And that's why the debt can never actually be paid off. In many cases, nations, people, companies are going deeper into debt simply to pay the interest on the earlier debt. And sometimes, you know, when people are economically pressed and they're pulling out of the economy, the government will step on in and borrow on behalf of the American people just to keep that system going. And again, the debt is just incredible. It's what, $30 trillion now. And I remember back in the 1990s, there was actually an idea circulating across America called the Ultimatum Resolution, and it simply said when the national debt goes over $6 trillion, the federal government is dissolved. Unfortunately, they could not get enough states to sign on to that measure, and here we are all these years later, and $30 trillion and no way to pay it off. And we've got Biden in the White House just pouring money all over Ukraine, which we'll never get back. And, looking at the recent omnibus bill, they're just spending money on just wild, crazy things. I think one item that was pointed out is a research study to train mice to binge drink alcohol. And I'm sorry, I don't really see the national security implications of a bunch of drunk mice running around a laboratory.
I don't either. But I just to take you back in history a little bit, do you remember the Credit River case?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
yes,
man, I'm telling you. I want to elaborate a little bit on this. Here's the thing. This is an attorney named Jerome Daly, D-A-L-Y. You can look this up. It's called the Credit River Decision. It's Jerome Daly versus the state of Wisconsin. And Jerome Daly defended himself, came in pro se as an attorney. And he had a lawsuit brought by a bank holding a mortgage on his house. He defaulted on it. The bank was suing to foreclose. And unfortunately for the bank, even though it was 1969, all the good little citizens out there were doing as they were told, never daring to question any kind of authority. Mr. Daley was very well educated in the way the banks pull money out of their butt. They create money out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that when a bank makes a loan, it creates money by the stroke of a pen and a ledger, which is then transferred to the borrower's account. And a lot of our listeners believe, Michael, that this is to do with a bond that is taken out on each person based on their birth certificate. And he knew that the law of consideration meant essentially that a contract was null and void if both parties aren't exchanging something of inherent value. And of course, Mr. Daley argued this and got the bank to admit they created the money with a stroke of a pen. And so the bank, since they didn't put up anything of value, the judge ruled, Judge Justice Martin V. Mahoney ruled against the bank, denied the foreclosure. Mr. Daley kept the house, paid no more mortgage. 6 months later, Justice Mahoney was found dead, allegedly by poison. Mr. Daley was a practicing attorney, was disbarred, and never practiced law again. And see, this is the thing. Abe Lincoln tried to issue greenbacks. They killed him. John
yes.
Kennedy tried $450 million worth of no-interest treasury notes. They killed him. So, you know, and everybody's got their – it's all about the money.
That's why John J. McCloy was on the Warren Commission. I mean, he was president of the World Bank, president of the Chase Manhattan Bank. He may have been a great banker, but he was absolutely unqualified to investigate the murder of a president. So he was obviously on the Warren Commission to make sure that the connection between Kennedy's U.S. notes and the assassination, that connection remained hidden.
Well, see, and the thing is I know you've done that research, which is mm-hmm. one of the reasons why we're talking about it. So the thing is now Wall Street. And everybody seems to think that Wall Street is it. I mean, these people, I have gotten out of the markets completely. I don't play in them. I don't play in crypto. I've been telling people that, you know, you really need to be thinking about hard coin like pre-1964 that's got some actual intrinsic value in it, because this dollar bill, you know, I go into McDonald's, and this is a funny thing. You go into McDonald's and you go through the drive-thru and you pull out a dollar bill, which I'm holding up right here. And you ask the clerk, do you accept Federal Reserve notes? And the kid looks like a deer in a headlight, like a dog you just whistle at and start cocking their head. He goes, well, let me go ask the manager. I mean, these people are not being educated as what's going on. It says Federal Reserve note is it's a promise to pay for mm-hmm. all legal debts. It says it right there on the note. You're passing debt around for legal tender for all debts, public and private. And so this is what our Federal Reserve system has done. Is make a mess of things, and now they want to convert this stuff into digital currency. What's going to happen to Wall Street as a result of that if they go all digital? Will you still be able to play on Wall Street and the stock market?
Well, Wall Street, and indeed a lot of our economy is already digital. There's far more currency in circulation in computer systems than there is in the paper that we have in our wallets. But this is basically the next step along the line of transferring control of the wealth from the people to the banks. Now, when the United States was started, the Constitution defined the dollar as a weight measure of silver and an equivalent value of gold as well. And that was the lawful money in the United States. The paper notes were merely claim checks. They had no inherent value of their own, and the older paper notes, like the silver certificates, would include, under that little thing about legal tender for all debts, public and private, saying that the note could be exchanged for lawful money at any bank, meaning you could take a silver certificate into the bank and be given a dollar's worth of silver for that. Then the silver was delinked from our monetary system in the 60s. And we were all convinced that these clad coins, these gas station game tokens that pass for money now, and the Federal Reserve notes are the money and have the value, but they absolutely don't. But what it did is when the money was based on silver and gold, and you had that in your pocket, you'd done your day's work, you'd been paid, you put that money in your pocket, it was under your control. There was nothing the government or the banks could do to change its value, and you could spend it wherever you want. Once we went over to the Federal Reserve System, the value of the money became fluid and could be adjusted and influenced by the bank and the government. And we saw some major devaluations of the dollar, supposedly for advantageous trade with Asian countries. This happened back in the 80s. And this is the next logical step. All money will be digital. It'll be in the bank's computers. And you'll live off your little plastic card. And a lot of people are very worried that the card will enforce adherence to government doctrine in that if you say something the government doesn't like, you don't get to eat that night. If you try and drive your car too far, you will no longer be able to buy gasoline. And also sorts of draconian tyranny is going to occur because of that. And I agree it is a concern. And that's over and above the possibility that we're going to see these digital currency systems become incredible targets for cyber criminals and hackers, and just like we're seeing already with credit cards.
Well, and the thing is that, you know, a lot of us have been disputing, and I think there's been a big increase in disputing unauthorized charges and credit cards these days. But the thing is, folks, we've been programmed as a matter of convenience to use debit and credit cards. And we did it because of the pandemic, because there was no other way to get food in your home and they were delivering it to your door. We still have people that are afraid to leave their houses. They're still using their credit cards and debit cards and still they get a money deposited, direct deposited in their account from Social Security, and they turn around and use their debit card and order groceries to be delivered to their home. This is all a matter of convenience, and it's there, and it's designed to condition us into advancement into the system. Now, the big thing, Michael, and you may have heard some other discussion about this at the World Economic Forum about owning nothing and being happy, mm-hmm. which is Klaus Schwab,
yes.
and the Davos Bunch. And we talked about it this morning on the show in the first hour, but you know, now they want to put a chip in your hand.
Okay.
And a lot of people think it's the mark of the beast. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm going to leave out the religious implications, but again, you know, we're already being monitored and spied on. All of this illegal violation of the Fourth Amendment. You know, we carry around little spy devices on our belts called cell phones. Where the government can listen to what we're doing at any time. Most people don't understand. The reason there's a speakerphone mode on cell phones is to justify the inclusion of a microphone that can hear the entire room and send that signal off to somewhere else. And the digital currencies are going to allow the banks and the government to monitor what we buy. Excuse me. And personally, I don't feel that my stopping off and getting a jelly donut on the way home from work is anybody's business but me and the baker. But we've seen the government talking about concepts like total information awareness, that if they can know everything about everybody, they'll be able to prevent terrorism and crime. Which apparently doesn't work because that guy up in New York who just took a machete to kill somebody, the FBI is saying, oh, he was on our radar for weeks and weeks. Apparently his own mother had called in and said, this guy's dangerous. You got to watch him. And still the murder happened. So obviously the real purpose of all this surveillance is something other than crime prevention.
Yeah. And see, it's all about control. That's, you know, what we don't want in America. And see, I've told people, look, here's the way it is. I don't know if I'm too far off the beaten path, but, you know, I said, look, in Ireland and England, when they started talking about going to the digital currency and now they're trying to digitize the pound sterling in the UK, we're sitting there looking at the situation going, wait a minute, the people all of a sudden started going to the ATMs and withdrawing all their money. In Ireland, they literally started rushing the banks and saying, look, we're going to close our accounts if you get yourself involved in this digital system. We don't want this digital system here. We like our cash. We like our euros. And we're not about to have you turn it into digital money. So that you, I mean, they saw the writing on the wall and they started protesting about it. Mm-hmm. And so the government backed off. But the thing is in this country, with the convenience of everything and soccer moms not paying attention to what's going on, other than the fact they get to go to Starbucks and order a latte you know, and I'm not trying to be stereotypical here, Mom. Just understand, I'm talking about a matter of convenience and how we have been so conditioned to behave in this manner. And people are just not playing in cash. And I've told people, go to the bank and start withdrawing whatever the maximum amount is. Most allow you to withdraw $500 a day. Go directly to the bank and start taking $500 a day out of your account and draining it dry. And somebody's going to ask you why you're doing it. And that's when you say, because I am opposed to digital currencies and I don't want it. And I'm going to close my account here. If I even smell a rat and you start going digital, I'm going to shut my account down and tell everybody I know that has an account here to come shut it down. And your bank will not have any customers. And see, I don't think banks want that.
No, the banks definitely need to have customers, although with their ability to just create money out of thin air and the fact that you cannot engage in commerce without borrowing that money, customers aren't as important to banks as the customers would like to believe.
Wow, that's a truth bomb.
Yeah, definitely on that one. As far as emptying your account, I mean, our advice from our show and our website for years has been that you should only keep as much money in the bank as you need to pay your immediate obligations and keep the rest under your own control in gold and silver coins. Because there are laws on the books where if the banks get into trouble, which is happening right now, that they can just help themselves to what's in your account. They can help themselves to what's in your safety deposit boxes. And it's really legalized looting of the population.
It is. And that's what we have to worry about and see if they have complete control of your phone. And you have no way to call your congressperson and say, hey, they just looted my account. What are you going to do about it? I mean, if you can't reach your congressman, how are you going to complain? I mean, you'd be stuck.
You're assuming the congressman would be inclined to listen.
Yeah. Another misconception. Wow.
Yes, John, another bad assumption.
I know. John in Tennessee, you're on the phone with Michael Rivero. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for bringing Michael on. He's a great guest. I have a question for both of you. Have either of you ever read The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes, we have.
Yes. On page 569, he came to an entirely different conclusion about that executive order that Kennedy signed and the role it played in the assassination. Why? Are you familiar with that part of the book?
I vaguely remember it. Why don't you go ahead and explain it?
Well, Mr. Griffin came to the conclusion that that had nothing to do with the assassination, that it was just a routine housekeeping order. And that's my recollection, because I was a college student at that time, and I was following Kennedy's economic policy, and his economic advisor was Walter Heller, who was a Keynesian who believed in loose money and not in the gold standard. So I would request that you and the listeners reread that part of G. Edward Griffin's book. And I have another question also.
Yeah, if you can hang on, we're coming up to the break now, John and Patrice, stay on hold. We're going to be right back after this break. We can continue this conversation here on the Power Hour with Michael Rivero. Stay with us.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2 skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding product, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs, and my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Just recently, we both started on the lithium balance. I want to keep my memory. My two in-laws are dealing with, the Alzheimer's. They're in their 90s, and I see it. I don't want to be like that, and I've heard you talk about lithium to, you know, improve our memory and keep us up there.
Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
And we are back at 32 minutes after the hour of 8 a.m. Central Time, Wednesday, January 4th, 2023. Dave Krieger with you. And, of course, Linda is manning the phones today. For those of you spending more than $200 at the Power Mall today, you get free shipping. And so you know how much that can cost and add to the bill. So we'll ship it to you for free. Whatever orders over $200 you make, Linda will be standing by right now to take your calls. And we appreciate that because it's Jay's birthday today. Power Hour Jay's taking the day off, so Linda's filling in. So anybody wants to call the toll-free number, if you can't order online, you can call directly. You got the number. And we've got Michael Rivera. We're not going to waste any more time getting back into our conversation here about what really happened. We've got John in Tennessee. You had a second question you wanted to talk about.
Yes, sir. A lot of people get on alternative radio and they question the moon landings. They say they were a hoax. And one thing they cite is the waving flag, the waving American flag that you see in the videos. I wonder, what's Michael's take on that?
Well, there's an easy explanation, and it has to do with the portable life support system they were wearing on the back. The PLIS is the short version of it. And that small box at the top was the sublimator, which was kind of a radiator, and it was constantly outgassing water vapor. And so it was sort of blowing this water vapor out, and anytime the astronauts walked by the flag, that outgassing of the vapor would move the flag.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've watched the videos, and that's the way it looked to me. The closer the astronauts were to the flags, the more the flags waved. that was my impression. So, that's all I wanted to talk to you about. Great show, and you have a great host there and a great guest.
Well, I appreciate that, John. Thank you so much. We appreciate your listening. And, of course, now, you know, it never fails. We have so many people that just take an interest in what's going on. Patrice in Ohio, you are on with Michael Rivera. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. So I have a question. When we talk about putting things in silver and gold versus money, I know that if you have, you know, an IRA or 401k that's self-directed under an LLC, blah, 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 not in the system, you're still required to have silver and gold put in a depository. I wouldn't trust putting my money in a depository. It's not on me. I'm sure the government thinks that's theirs too.
Well, when push comes to shove, the government thinks they own everything, and we're coming up on what appears to be the Third World War. And if you go back and look at some of the draconian measures that were taken by the government during big mistake number one and big mistake number two, you will see that, the government just went entirely unconstitutional. They were confiscating materials. Roosevelt confiscated gold at one point. Basically repair the economy that he was dealing with. And, we could see the government do that again and say, except for your grandmother's jewelry, all gold and silver coins and bars must be surrendered to the government. And we'll give you a big stack of pretty printed paper in exchange for it. That could happen again because it did happen before.
So why would anyone think that their money or their precious metals are safe in these?
Well, if they're under your own control, they'd be safe because if you're going to be buying silver and gold, buy it in small amounts. If you buy a large amount, the gold dealer, silver dealer, has to submit a tax form. So that the IRS knows that you've got it. But I forget where the cutoff point is right now, but below a certain amount, they're just not keeping track because the paperwork would be too immense.
Well, I think the CTR right now is 10,000, isn't it?
I think it was lower than that, but I'll go with 10,000. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, they had talked about 600 per transaction.
Is that per transaction?
Yeah, they have to fill out a CTR. Okay. If you go to the bank, see, the way that things used to be is when you went to the bank and you put in more than $10,000 in cash, they had to file a cash transaction report. And this is part of the Know Thy Customer campaign. And it's just another matter of control so that they know you've got that money, which is why I kind of scratch my head when these flea market guys that make all this cash renting parking spaces at a giant flea market in Texas go to the bank and they open up the trunk of their cars and they've got grocery sacks full of dollar bills and they're going into the bank. I was like, why are you doing that? You should be taking and converting all this currency into something more usable or spending it on things you need. I mean, we were talking about Tony Robbins yesterday, and I know you heard that conversation, Patrice. And, he was basically saying on Tucker Carlson the other night that people need to take this money and invest it in themselves and forget about the United States government, forget about Wall Street. You don't need them. They only basically, and Michael, you may have a different take on this. They only represent 8% of the economy, of the economic output of the country. Is that not
true?
You're
absolutely correct. The vast majority of economic activities in small businesses, individuals, entrepreneurs, and, government and the banks persist by creating the myth that we have to have them, that you cannot have life without them.
Yeah, see, that's a big misnomer.
Well, I had another thing, too. If we're all shareholders of this so-called government, why can't we just forgive all the debt and just say, no, we don't owe it and we're not paying it?
That's a good question. I think, the bankers would go to the government and say to the government they can't do that. and there would be a law passed very rapidly to say, you cannot question the debt. In fact, now that I think about it, right after the Civil War, there was a constitutional amendment passed specifically saying that the federal debt cannot be questioned by anybody.
Had to have been 1871 when they made those agreements with the banks, right? Because it couldn't pay their debt at the time?
If we can't question their debt, then nobody's debt should be questioned. So therefore, nobody owes anybody anything.
Well, there is the concept of odious debt in international law, and that is that when a government borrows money to build schools and hospitals and roads and infrastructure, the citizens of that country are legitimately bound by that debt. But when a government is borrowing money for war and they lose that war, then the debt is written off. There have been recent efforts by international lawyers to get that concept overturned. But as of right now, it's still out there as a legal precedent.
Well, and then you have fraud because they're not being honest with you with how they're spending the money.
Well, fraud negates consent.
So there's always fraud.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we know that. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, for financing wars, which we are right now, we're in a proxy war. Michael, you mentioned the idea of World War III.
Yes.
You know, because we've already had one and two, and history does repeat itself, and those who are ignorant ever to doomed to repeat it. The thing is that where do you see and when do you see? I mean, Ukraine, I think, is going to be it. And if they try to push Ukraine into NATO or do anything, put boots on the ground, American boots on the ground, or NATO gets directly involved in Ukraine, which I believe they already are.
Yes, they are.
That we could end up getting into a strategic nuclear confrontation. I'm being very dicey and eloquent with my wording here because it's very difficult to predict what they will do. They're already making veiled threats. To hell with the SALT agreement or anything that, you know, we've specifically entered into, because Putin's going to do what Putin needs to do to protect the Soviet Union, whether it's produces unintended consequences. What's your take on that?
Well, look back at the Minsk agreement. I mean, now it's come on out that that whole thing was a fraud to basically buy time for Ukraine to build up its military. And my concern is, you know, we're all afraid of nuclear war. We've seen the pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But all of a sudden, we're seeing all of this biological warfare activity taking place in Wuhan, China, multiple labs in Ukraine, which are even now being relocated to other countries. And I think that World War III will involve some nuclear weapons, but is more than likely going to be a biological war.
That's pretty scary.
Yes, it is.
Okay. And Patrice, any other questions?
I just think this all leads to what, you know, the mother weffers were talking about when they said, you'll own nothing and love it, because it all fits together.
It is. And the thing is that, you know, we became slaves to the bankers because we allowed the government, who's supposed to be representing the will of we the people, not the other way around, allow them to come in and take control of everything. And these are people we elected that we trusted to do the right thing, did the wrong thing. And we all have to pay for the mistakes of our forefathers, which I got in these conversations with both of my parents when they were still alive. And their comeback was, well, we did the best we could. The system is the best we've got. And I kept saying, no, it's not. It's the worst system. And you people are responsible for this. And my father fought in the Second World War. So I'm just kind of like scratching my head going, man, what a mess. So
yeah, it is a mess indeed. And, you know, I maintain that the Federal Reserve is actually unconstitutional because the Constitution specifically says Congress has control of minting and issuing the money. And the 10th Amendment prohibits them from delegating that authority to a privately owned central bank. But they went ahead and did it anyway.
Pretty scary stuff. All right. Yep. Patrice, thanks so much for your call. As far as becoming a slave to the bankers, there's an article on that you wrote as well. That was started with the concept of public currency being a public utility and necessity. This is basically what started this whole idea of instituting something, a standard of value, a store of value, a medium of exchange. They knew they had to have something. Why didn't our government just sidestep all that and come up with their own game plan?
Well, the early United States was basically following established traditions. I mean, the word dollar goes back to some German silver mines in Thaler, Germany, and they would sell their product in round coins of identical size and weight, and they were so reliable and trustworthy, they started being used as a unit value of medium exchange. And other nations started copying it. You had the colonial dollar, the mill dollar, and so forth and so on. That's where that originated, having a medium of exchange rather than a straight barter system. The problem is with private central banking, the value of that paper note, as I said before, is now under the control of the banks and the governments, not the people who own it. You can go to work and get your paycheck and go home, and then the next morning get up and hear on the news that the money you've earned and already put in your pocket or your bank is now worth about half of what it was before. And you go to the store and imported products have doubled in price. And again, it's because we've lost control of the value of our own money.
Well, see, they're controlling the fiat, the interest rates and everything. Why are they raising? You would think that in order to stop inflation, that they would tell the government. And see, this is the reason why this shift show going on in Congress right now over McCarthy becoming speaker or not. And the infighting that's going on right now is just making our Congress look utterly stupid. But the bigger problem is I think the Democrats are afraid that the oversight committees and the appropriations committees are going to put the kibosh on spending from this point forward. And they're going to try to defund the FBI, which is what the Democrats don't want, because that's been the basis of their control the last 3 years.
Well, the FBI is not really loyal to the Democrats. They're loyal to whoever's in power, and they'll probably be switching sides over to the GOP, at least as far as the representatives are concerned. But the FBI, going all the way back to J. Edgar Hoover, makes a point of spying on and obtaining blackmail information on key politicians to head off any possibility of interference from the government. That's how J. Edgar Hoover wound up being named FBI director for life, is he had the goods on everybody. He even blackmailed John F. Kennedy at one point.
Well, and the thing is, too, is that this is what Jeffrey Epstein is doing with all modern day politicians that are pedophiles, is videotaping them having sex with minors and using that to blackmail them. I know that happened. And I know what's going on. And I know that there is a large amount of Congress people that are caught up in that.
Yeah, there are, and this is obviously a huge intelligence operation. I'm sure you've heard the story where down in the Virgin Islands, the attorney general filed a lawsuit against J.P. Morgan Chase for profiting off of Jeffrey Epstein's little sex island and not reporting suspected illegal activity to authorities. 2 days later, the governor of the Virgin Islands fired her. And is out there saying, oh, one's got nothing to do with the other. Trust us. You know, it's just business as usual. But somebody with a lot of juice does not want the guest list released, because if that were to happen, then the blackmail value goes away. Because, yes, we already know you were, dipping your wick down there in Epstein's little island. And this is all about blackmailing key politicians, British royalty, heads of corporations, and it was a massive operation. It went on for years and years, and the big question now is, along with, who was on that guest list, is where are all those digital tapes and recordings being kept now? Who's got them now?
Exactly. And the thing is that, Monica, back in the closet. He's been on multiple flights with Epstein. Everybody knows it. And, when you've got this kind of and people, I don't know what it is about these party line voters. This is where I think that the money, the control, the FTX scam with cryptocurrency. I see cryptocurrency as an evil. Should have never been invested in. People thought that they could take and hide their earnings and their assets in crypto. And now look what's happened. And this, you think this guy's going to walk?
Actually, it's kind of a tricky question. Sam Bankman-Fried, I like to call him.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Did a lot of donations to Democratic candidates. In fact, the only person who donated more to Democrats was George Soros. And so he had a lot of the Democratic establishment rooting for him and protecting him and keeping the authorities away from what he was doing. I mean, they should have twigged on to what he was doing a long time ago. But in our current state of affairs, the secret to success is you can do whatever you want to get rich quick as long as you cut the government in for a piece of the action. And so he did that. Well, now the bankruptcy court is threatening to claw back all of those Democrat donations. And if they succeed in doing that, Sam is in a world of hurt because all of his protection is going to vanish.
Yeah, that's for sure. And what do you think about the idea, speaking about bankruptcy, what do you think about the idea of individual Americans that are forced into bankruptcy court to try to protect their home from foreclosure? About discharging their share of the national debt. Have you ever pondered that idea?
Well, I've pondered the idea, and you know, it sounds good. It's like on this year's taxes, we should all declare Zelensky and 40 million Ukrainians as dependents.
I love it. That's a first. That's a first.
From
Michael.
A practical point of view, I don't think it's going to work. And the only one who can discharge the U.S. government debt in bankruptcy is the U.S. government if it is forced into bankruptcy. But it never will be because it's got an endless wallet called the American people.
Yeah, that's a sad state of affairs. And we, the people, just have to stand up and say no. And nobody wants to do it because they're all afraid that the federal government, you know, will send the SWAT team out. And at 6 o'clock in the morning or earlier than that, you know, their front door will get kicked in and they'll get a concussion grenade thrown in and they'll get demonized in the media. And they just don't want that. So we'll just be dutiful little good American slaves. And you've even written articles about that as well. About how we became a slave to the banker. And the 1998 article you wrote on the United States is in deep doo-doo sounded a warning about the debt-based economic system and made some sadly accurate predictions about the draconian steps the government would take. Can you elaborate a little bit on what the steps are?
Oh, boy, that's going back a ways here. Well, ultimately, the short version is that when push comes to shove, the government is simply going to grab more and more and more from the American people until it does trigger a civil war or a revolution, which I personally would like to avoid. But already we ran a story on our website and our radio show yesterday where studies are saying that the government is going to have to raise taxes 40% or cut spending by 30% just to achieve anything close to a balanced budget. Personally, I would favor the cutting government spending. We've got enough drunk mice running around the house as it is. And the government's answer to every problem is to, raise taxes on the people. And the government has a long history of every time the economy gets really messed up, they get into a major war to try and distract everybody from it. You had the crash of 1907, followed by World War I, the crash of 1929, followed by World War II. We had the crash of 2008. And here we are aiming nuclear missiles at each other.
Yeah, which is why everybody needs to go to the Power Mall and order Nuke Protect. Now, the final thing I want to talk about is the Electro.
Yes.
You talk about this is a proposal for new value-based currency that can't be hoarded or manipulated. That sounds almost like digital.
Well, it's not really digital. It's basically the idea that any currency to work must have a commodity base, whether it's silver, gold, you know, white seashells, whatever. And the idea of the Electro is a currency based on a kilowatt hour of electricity. And, it can be tokenized. like the early silver certificates. It can be tokenized and spent as money, but it always has to be redeemable for that kilowatt hour of electricity. This certainly would boost efforts to make our electric production and distribution systems far more efficient, probably get a lot more people with solar cells up on their roofs. And again, it's a form of currency that is not going to be subject to manipulation by bankers, we hope.
Well, we hope. And the thing is that the government has spent so much time trying to get control of things, including what's in our wallet. And, you know, every time that "what's in your wallet" comes on, I just freak out, because it's like the banks already know. They've got FinCEN. FinCEN is out there, you know, pretty much controlling the entire shift show. Well, it's been fun. Michael Rivero, we are out of time for this particular segment today. And we thank you so much for being here. The website, once again, is whatreallyhappened.com. And you've got the radio show by the same name. And thanks so much for joining us here on the Power Hour. Ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time for today. Clay Clark will be joining us tomorrow with some new enlightening information. And you're going to freak out when you hear it. Now, we appreciate you joining us today. In the meantime, God bless you and God bless the United States of America, what's left of it.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregarest and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products. And he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.